From the Marquee Media Studio inside Mark Tank, it's the Mark Haney Show.
Yes, this is the Mark Haney Show on a mission to ignite the entrepreneurial revolution right here in the hometown we love. We do that by building the Backyard Advantage, the most connected community in the world for local entrepreneurs based upon a culture of love. Today, we're going to have an entrepreneur on our show that has paired his science with an art to make something that he has named South Fork Vodka. Yeah, we're going to be talking vodka, distilled spirits, and how nuclear fusion is actually a part of the making of this stuff. We have Jonathan Dorfman joining us. Welcome to the show, Jonathan.
Thank you, Mark.
Yeah, appreciate you being here. Yeah, now, so let's talk. Let's start by talking about how you got into this real quickly, and then what is South Fork Vodka and the spirits business?
Yeah, absolutely. Just to clarify, no nuclear fusion in or inside the bottle.
Oh, I thought you were using some kind of special science.
Well, we certainly are. We certainly are. My distillery partner and I both have physics backgrounds. We actually met working at an applied physics lab. Almost 15 years ago.
Okay.
Now, and some of the we were one of the projects we were working on was a DARPA funded attempt at nuclear fusion. So that's kind of
okay.
Where you know
okay.
That was one of the things the lab did. The other we had some really cool tech layers we were exploring a lot in like fuel refinement. With the Department of Defense and DARPA.
Okay, and then you took that science and somehow turned it into a way to make vodka.
Essentially. We were working under some specific contracts in ethanol purification and refinement for, again, the fuel side of things. And we're very serendipitously afforded the opportunity to purchase the guts of our old lab once it didn't get federal funding renewed, and we're able to rope in some great licensing around this tech and then adapt it for consumptive
okay.
spirits.
But your vodka is, it tastes different, right? Is the way that you make it allow it to be a differentiated product?
Yeah, I mean, the easiest way to market spirits, because you don't want to have a debate about whose poison is cleaner. Granted, you know, nobody really should, you know, go out of their way to start new alcohol consumption habits. But if you are a vodka connoisseur or a vodka consumer, our vodka has won awards in every competition it's entered. It's the highest rated vodka produced in California. And that's kind of the anecdotal.
Okay. So I don't drink, I don't really drink vodka per se, but like, what are the top drinks that people make with vodka? It's like, you can make a screwdriver,
Cosmopolitan, screwdriver, Cape Codder, Sex on the Beach, you know, classic martini.
Oh yeah.
James Bond.
Bloody Mary, is that what you put in Bloody Mary?
Absolutely, okay. Bloody Mary. So it's the number one
use cases
consumed distilled spirit in the U.S.
There's not much taste in vodka, right? It's like it's got very little
traditionally
taste.
It's been categorized as flavorless and odorless.
Okay, but then people flavor them too.
Yes, and that is kind of a different category of spirits. In the world of actual vodka, you can make like both a super thin kind of water-like vodka or more of a vodka, full-body vodka. When we do tasting, we kind of strip it down the way you would analyze wine. And you look at the body, the mouthfeel, do you catch minerality? And that comes down to a preference. I mean, at the end of the day, the vodkas that are going to win the biggest, most prestigious awards with international, you know, tasting panels essentially are not the blankest, odorless, most neutral vodka.
So you want a specific taste or a flavor that pops.
You want to, I mean, you want to taste some element of the grain profile. You want to taste some element of the water that's being used in this production mechanism. And then ultimately what's also going to influence kind of flavor and mouthfeel are kind of these additional radicals, these additional things you kind of don't want, you know, the heads and the tails and how well you can kind of minimize those concentrations.
So the water, South Fork, is that South Fork of the Yuba River?
South Fork, it is named after South Fork of the Yuba River, and we do absolutely not use river water.
Okay.
We use certified natural spring water from a spring right behind Nevada City.
Okay, what else goes into it? So you got the spring water from someplace outside Nevada City. You guys are based in the Nevada City area.
Yeah, we're in Grass. We're right out of Grass Valley. My distillery partner and I both grew up in the area.
Okay.
We named it South Fork after something.
Is that a place that you guys used to go hang out?
Yeah, it's very, very precious to us, you know, kind of the drumbeat of the region. You know, for anybody who's been up in the hills and hit some of the local river spots, you know, it's kind of heaven for hippies.
Okay, I'm going to have to go check it out. I've never been there.
Yeah, and I mean, just wonderful house-sized granite rocks kind of just carved through with, you know, beautiful rushing water. Right now, the water this season's been pretty high water flow, so obviously
so still rough.
Proceed with caution, you know.
Yeah. You know, okay, so I see where you got the name. Great brand, too. South Fork. I think of the South Fork of the American River, so this is South Fork of the Yuba River.
You know,
River.
It's whatever really river.
There's a South Fork in every river, whatever probably.
Is precious to you. You know, it's precious to us. My wife did the artwork on it. You know, we were going to call it Mad Scientist Vodka and put it in a beaker bottle before...
because you guys are the scientists.
Before we were intelligently cautioned otherwise.
So am I mistaken then in the way that you make your vodka? Is it different than the way other people make their vodka?
Fundamentally,
okay,
yes.
Okay, so describe that difference to a C student from high school.
We developed some tech layers to basically target very, very elusive trace compounds called fusel oils.
Okay.
Everybody's getting rid of them. The standards to which you need to get rid of them have been the same for 100 years because of the industry we're in and the lobby.
Trace mineral oil. So you keep...
They're called fusel oils. Fusel alcohols.
So, and then you want them in your vodka.
You don't want them in your vodka.
And you, I mean, so you've eliminated those. Yeah, other people do.
Traditional distillation will eliminate, you know, a huge percentage of these oil. And that's what your heads and your tails are. And that's what you're trying to get rid of anyways. Methanol, acetaldehyde, ethyl acetate, acetyl acetate.
So you found a way to get rid of all of them where others get rid of most of them?
We were working under federal contracts at the lab to basically come up with tech to do selective reductions of these concentrations.
Okay.
Better than traditional methods would allow for.
Okay, so what's the business model? I know you have different branches of the business. So you sell vodka, you sell it through what kind of distribution channels, and you have other spirits as well besides vodka, I believe.
Yeah, we have vodka. We have two small batch gins. We have a kind of New World, our take on a Hendrick-style gin, and then that's called GN, Good Night, and then a California Super Botanical, which is... what we kind of call gin for introductory gin drinkers.
Introductory gin.
Yeah, it's super aromatic.
The 21-year-old.
gin has such a historic stigma. You know, it's your that pine needle punch in the mouth.
Okay.
Your grandmother's. You know, if you were a 17-year-old delinquent stealing some gin from your parents, it was probably Bombay
it's got a more of a bite. Vodka doesn't have much taste to it.
Yeah,
gin's got more of a bite.
Yeah, and traditional gin has a very distinct, piney, kind of a little bit abrasive.
So what
profile.
Do you make with gin? I've heard like gin and tonic. What else do people make with gin?
I mean, gin and juice.
Gin and juice, right?
Yeah, I mean, there's... beautiful, beautiful cocktails you can make with gin. We do...
At our golf tournament, you did some kind of signature cocktail.
Yeah, we did a cranberry crush. So we did cranberry juice, fresh lime juice, and like a ginger simple syrup that we made. So
okay.
You just do like an extraction on fresh
great.
Ginger.
I guess I have had it, yeah.
Yeah, and it's bright. And then the gin we were using at the tournament was our are super botanical. So that's very cardamom forward, lemon, grapefruit. And we do all like the whole botanical extractions. In-house.
Okay. So what, who do you sell to? Who's the, I can picture who the end customer is, but where do they buy it? Do they go to a bar?
Yeah,
do they go to a store?
We go through, our main customers in terms of where sales are generated are bars and restaurants and retail locations.
Okay.
So we sell to the Save Marts, Safeways, Total Wines, BevMo's, Raley's Bel Air, Nuggets, Holiday wow. Markets.
Don't oh, wow. You're in yeah. a lot of, you've got a lot yeah, of distribution we're in channels.
Yeah, we're in about, it floats seasonally, but about 1,000 locations.
Oh my
statewide.
Goodness. And how do you promote your product besides golf tournament? I know you're kind of doing that for fun. I didn't really probably get you too many users, but
yeah, I mean, there's traditional marketing. We've done, year long plus radio campaigns. We do a lot of targeted push advertisements. So
you pull it, I consider that like you're going to the consumer, but then kind of pulling it through the retail.
We're essentially marketing to end users. So we're marketing mm-hmm. to consumers, but we're selling to retailers mm-hmm. and bars and restaurants. And there's a chicken and the egg reality in alcohol where a bar, wants to know if it's going to have demand before they want to bring it on. And so do retailers. Every retailer is looking for, in the liquor alcohol aisle, every shelf spot is commanding something like $50 a week of retail sales.
Okay.
And if you're missing these minimums, you're getting rolled out at some point in the near future.
Yeah.
And it's significantly worse to be rolled out than never have been in the first place. Despite what you might think of as, hey, I would rather have sales versus not sales, but your market position and your velocity is as or more important.
So in other words, you don't want to go into a store if it's not going to move. You don't
not
want to stick the retailer
not
with it. And once they dump you, it's hard to get back in.
Absolutely. And we've done some what we would call discovery learning. In that
you got eliminated from a couple of shelves.
We won some very, very prestigious big awards very early, right after launching, and it allowed us the negotiation position to ask for a huge several hundred store placements, including several hundred stores in like San Jose area. And it really wasn't where we had marketing campaigns laid out, and we didn't have personnel in place to really manufacture those sell-through rates if we weren't meeting the minimums.
Yeah, sounds like a good learning. So now you've obviously grown a lot since the launch. Any big learnings? Because I've dealt with whiskeys and that kind of thing, people who have launched businesses. And really the whole model is it can cause like cash constraints and all kinds of challenges just getting the product to market. Talk to us about anybody who might be thinking about having a product that they sell through retail like that. What kind of challenges did you run into?
Yeah, I mean, for like really any consumer packaged good, it's super important to really vet out your revenue models, obviously. Mm. We came into the distilled spirits world a little naively for, what the industry actually is. And we've had some beautiful kind of technological advantages that have allowed us some staying power that we wouldn't otherwise have if we were just industry standard. But really like looking at where you want to be in terms of both your business and what opportunity actually exists in terms of like market research. And you need those to align. I didn't study physics to create a job where I drive around, 40,000 miles a year delivering vodka and doing, boots on the ground alcohol sales. Mm-hmm. But, I'm here anyways, and I'm happy to be here because we've refined our models clearly enough that, we see the opportunity still in front of us.
Great.
It's been, it's been a real opportunity and learning, the business side of things, moving from the research, you know, world we used to exist in.
Well, what about the research in terms of where to price it? Do you go in as an entry level price point type product? Do you go in high end because you've got the great, you know, the rankings and so on? Or do you try to hit sort of the middle of the road to try to compete with, you know, Smirnoffs or whatever, everything else? I don't know what the different brands are, but everything else.
Yeah. So, I mean, it's 90% of any product that's going to be launched in market is going to be marketing driven. And you're going to look for, again, for what type of addressable models that you're, or addressable markets that you're going to try to attack, and then kind of what the considerations are. What supply chain constraints do you have? Is it unlimited, foreseeable, long-term contracts? Is supply, you know, valuable? Are you going to lean into like high-end luxury scarcity models? You know,
and, what did you decide?
We originally launched South Fork to be, you know, a Tito's competitor. You know, it's just, you know, the big 5,000-pound gorilla in the room is certainly Tito.
And they're, and price-wise, they're kind of middle of the road.
Yeah, they're, you know, quality, affordable. Mm-hmm. You know, it's a competitive category. Vodka is one of the most competitive categories because of its neutrality and because of, you know, the ability to kind of pump product and then marketing campaigns behind it. Tito started in 1995. He did an incredible job. They sold it to a private equity firm in, I think, the mid-2000s, like 2008, around there. It's the number one alcohol brand, you know, distilled spirits in the world, worldwide sales.
Wow.
And they're, you know, they have a entrenched, brutally entrenched customer loyalty.
Well, how do you compete with someone like that?
You either with marketing dollars or ground war.
Okay.
So you're running an attrition campaign. You're pumping.
Nutrition campaign?
Attrition.
Attrition.
No nutrition.
So an attrition. So that, in other words, you're trying to take market share somehow?
Yeah. I mean, the reality is that distilled spirits are a relatively fixed market. Nobody who's creating a new distilled spirit is really creating new distilled spirits consumers. You really look at the industry as this relatively fixed but growing $600 billion global industry. And if you can take, you know, a tenth of a percent of vodka sales in California away from Diageo, Beam Suntory, Rico Bernard, they're going to come and say, hey, can we buy a piece of you? Chances are you're making vodka bottles that cost you $8 to $12. We can probably make them for $3. We can, you know, use industry standard marketing tools plus some nepotistic connection industry.
Yeah. You try to influence the, who are the influencers? Are these the bartenders, restaurateurs?
For like, yeah.
People, I mean, that for merchandise us, the grocery store?
For us, yes. I mean, we're not a celebrity brand, which is a popular go-to-market strategy. And our biggest advocates are both our bartenders, and consumers. I mean, really, they're, you know, people demanding better local products at the restaurants that they eat at anyways. Mm-hmm. Is really, you know.
Okay, so you buy yours, especially if you sell into the, you know, let's call it Northern California. Yeah. It's like you're buying
but I mean, people have to know about us. We have to market for them to know about us. They have to be introduced. You know, it's not my expectation that, you know, why aren't people asking for it? If it's not available in the grocery store, like, that's really on me. That's not on the end user, you know. And there's, you know, I have to kind of know, you know, for whatever industry I'm in, how I manufacture that community element, that demand element, the people who do care, you know, because those are the people who are going to move a brand or not. We're talking about, you know, the technical elements of product creation, which I really value and think are very important. But at the end of the day, you're selling a consumer product to a consumer market, and you need people to care. And that's your community. You know, that's, you know, we grew up here. You know, we have a lot of friends here also, but, you know, we have to make people care. You know, so what do you care about? Do you care about higher quality? Do you care about locally sourced ingredients? Do you care about, you know, ABC initiative we're doing with the Truckee Tahoe Humane Society,
or the Haiti Biz Golf Tournament. That's right. So yeah, we got some entrepreneurs drinking some vodka and gin that day. So now, in terms of distribution, there are constraints because you have to have special licensing and that kind of thing. So do you sell through distribution or do you sell directly to these retailers?
There's a couple different styles of licenses. We've had statewide distributors. If we're going out of state, it's required for us, given our license type, to work through a third-party middleman. There's a couple dynamic ways to do that. Like if you go to our website, you can buy a bottle of South Fork. It looks like you're buying it directly from us. You're actually buying it from a third-party retailer who we've already sold the bottle to, and then they're hiring another third party to do the actual fulfillment.
So what's your website?
Southforkvodka.com.
Southforkvodka.com. So you can get on your website and just buy some vodka.
Yep.
Okay.
I mean, again, we're not like expecting to change consumer habits. You know, I'm not frustrated.
Yeah, I think people want to try that. There's other locally, I think of the Tahoe Blue guy, right? Or guys, they make they've got a local vodka. I think people want to buy it because they've got great branding as well, but also you kind of feel like you're buying local, you're buying Tahoe. Yeah. So people knowing that, you know, when they're buying Tito's or Smirnoff or whatever, it's like, I don't know where that comes from or who, you know, or Kirkland. Like, hey, I'd rather buy it from the local guys. I think a lot of people feel that way.
Yeah. That's important. And that's kind of one of the, you know, when launching a brand, you're like, what are the value propositions that I'm going to kind of exploit immediately? You're like, cool. The easiest thing to say is we're local. Hey, you know, what's the other pieces? Okay, we're gluten-free. Okay, what's the next piece? We use local spring water.
Are other vodkas not gluten-free?
Technically, they all should be gluten-free because gluten's a protein and it shouldn't make it over the column of a still. But you can't, there can be trace glutens. I mean, ethanol has this chemical property that's makes it a little bit, for lack of a better term, kind of molecularly sticky. It's called azeotropic. So it tends to, and that's where you carry a lot of these other kind of trace compounds you're trying to get rid of anyway.
So you can brand yours or market yours as totally gluten-free.
Yes.
Yeah.
And yeah. And I mean, you're never going to get a wheat vodka gluten-free certified because the board is just not going to like, you can run chromatography on this and say, here, I want to run an analysis for gluten presence of gluten and I have zero parts per million and, you know, X amount of liters. And you're like, that should be enough to say what it is, but you're also working with different regulatory boards that have their own terms of what like words mean. And
so what's the longer term vision for the company? What do you see doing with it? Cause you guys are very intelligent and, you've got yourself into this. I can imagine that there's a vision for what you're going to, you know, where you're taking this thing long term.
Yeah. I mean, South Fork, we want to be a like West Coast regional brand. It was kind of naive to think that it would be easy to launch in anywhere because the tech would sell itself, so to speak. Mm-hmm. You know, and obviously, you know, we learned some of these by pounding our head against the wall, you know, launching soft market campaigns in Miami or New York. And why is it so much more challenging to, you know, retain an account? Some stuff that seems in retrospect, you know, pretty obvious, having now done this for years. You want to, you know, as Snoop Dogg would say, you got to get in where you fit in. And, you know, South Fork has this, you know, this beautiful West Coast mountain, fresh spring water branding. That's where we see the easiest leverage to kind of continue to gain market share. We have some like more artsy brand derivatives. You know, there's a problem that some producers face where they spin up too many brands and become a SKU factory. Mm. And it has a potential, if you kind of don't balance it well, to kind of tank your market ability. You burn supplier partners because you have brands that aren't selling through versus brands that are selling through. But we've come up with some like universal IP, like imagery, kind of cartoon art imagery, that we think has like more global resonance. And so that's kind of where, you know, what we think will be an easy hack to kind of gain placements for vodka we produce using and leveraging the tech we use to kind of gain market penetration.
Okay, can you
that was a little mouthy there.
Can you break that down for me? What are you referring to?
Yeah, so we have another brand of vodka called Bored Vodka.
Okay.
And it leverages the same underlying tech we use to make South Fork as quality as it is.
Okay.
So it's also incredibly high quality vodka. But it is really leveraging kind of different market appeal. You're saying,
okay.
You know, if I'm in an industry which is the most like loyal, entrenched brand, you know, brand loyal consumer package good outside of maybe cigarettes. And, you know, I'm really, my hardest point is new user acquisition. Like, what is going to make people try this? And the answer is either very traditional industry standard marketing dollars, which is, call it 10,000 a city a month minimum to play. It costs $40 million entry level to launch a national brand rollout. $80 million to do it well with low percentage. So if I'm looking to kind of hack market placements, you know, I really just want to take an extra 0.1% away from Diageo. Like, am I going to do that by launching heavy marketing campaigns for South Fork, in which by on its face is a very locally entrenched, you know, and got to say, love our local. We have diehard enthusiasts, you know, who have helped make this brand what it is, you know. Then I think there's two or three people floating around with a tattoo of the South Fork logo.
Very cool.
But you know, at the end of the day, you know, like if we want to see the underlying tech, you know, make it into the hands of Beam Suntory, Rico Pernard, to see its way into thousands of different brands, you know, what does that look like? And for us, that's like, that's clearly market share. You know, you can build spirits out. You asked me like where our price point was. You can build spirits out in growth models where you're just simply trying to grow faster to take more market share to accomplish something, a buyout, a tech placement, a piece of my, you know, personal goal, whatever you're looking for. Or you can build like, hey, I want to build a local distillery revenue model and I'm looking to run a distillery as a business lifestyle for the next 20 years. At the end of the day, like my board doesn't like when I talk about it, but like, I don't really care if people drink vodka or not, because there are people who love it. I enjoy vodka. You know, I drink my vodka. I have peace of mind knowing I'm drinking incredibly refined vodka I make, and I can look at all the, you know, analytics of. But, you know, if people don't drink vodka, like, I certainly don't want them to. And I certainly don't, you know, didn't get into this industry to convince people to drink vodka for the next 20 years of my life. I came here knowing that we had some very cool bench scale technology we helped develop, and you know, want to see the benefits of that.
What's the most valuable part of your company? Is it the brand or is it the tech?
From its face value, it would be the brand. I mean, the brand is, you know, what creates the attention. It's what owns the market placement. It's where the trademarks live, which is what you're essentially selling when you're selling a brand. You're selling your book of business, mm-hmm. your trademarks, your goodwill.
But I got the sense that you wanted to see your tech put into other...
Our goal is not to say, hey, we have the secret sauce to make the best thing and we're going to squeeze the value out of this by launching the best vodka in the world. It's like, it really... Everybody should have less acetaldehyde. Right. If you're going to drink, heaven forbid, if you're going to drink a liter of vodka every day for the rest of your life, like the less, the better. Right. The less any of the other things you would otherwise not want. And, you know, that's possible. Like I said, the standards for like.
Drink a liter of vodka.
Yeah. No, not at all. The standards for like refinement have essentially been the same for 100 years. Like, is that because the tech just simply hasn't, like, nobody has any clue how to make analytical distillation any better? No, it's because like people are going to do what they're minimally required to do, and people
if it sells,
and people aren't going to know to like ask for something unless they know to ask for something. You know, we have the easiest way to market alcohol is to is anecdote. You're like, here, the judges said it's 97 points, and they do this professionally, and we're at all these Michelin star restaurants because they know what good vodka is, and people are like, I also want to know what good vodka is, so I'm going to listen to the experts in this category. And in reality, like, you're like, we all want the, you know, you want the cleanest gas for your car. You want the cleanest vodka for your liver. You want, you know, the, and you're, you know, you're going to do some amount of due diligence, and you're going to take the rest on marketing and kind of consumer sentiment. All right. So you're like, how do you hack consumer sentiment? How do you get, you know, there's acquisition, which is the hard piece of any consumer packaged good or any kind of sales. And then there's retention. I think we have retention. If you try my vodka, I make it available. It's in the grocery store. I'm not asking you to go down some rabbit hole and go online and do whatever. You know, if it's there and you've tried it and you give a crap about the quality of vodka or even the flavor of vodka, like,
it's pretty sticky.
Statistics will run their game here. You know, I think we're going to win on that race. But again, you know, like we've survived because we're here to survive. We're here to put this out, and we, you know.
That's great. Okay, so closing thoughts. What did I not ask you? And also, what words of wisdom might you have for somebody who is thinking they might want to get into this kind of space? And what should they be thinking about prior? Maybe not even this kind of space. Anything direct to consumer.
Yeah, any
sell through
addressable market. Mm-hmm. You know, some element of supply chains. Double your expected budget up front. You know, everything's going to cost overrun. That's just facts. You know, there's things you haven't thought or considered. But the other side is, like, it's just simply amazing what you can accomplish if you don't give up. You know, the attrition wars for, you know, to get into Safeways, to get into, you know, you're like, here, write a follow-up email every week. It seems kind of tone deaf, but you're like, until you know how to do it, you don't know how to do it. And, you know, like, basically just continuing to swing on things is really, it really opened up my mind in the world of possible, you know, that, you know, something, some real takeaway from the challenges of this experience, you know, or just exactly what can be accomplished. You know, this wasn't, you know, something I was meditating on 10 years ago that you're like, how do we make sure we have the best vodka on the West Coast of the United States? You're like, it wasn't something on my
just start
top 100.
And don't quit. Yeah, you'll figure it out, huh?
Yeah, I mean, and, you know, obviously, you know, reach out to mentors. You know, it would have saved, you know, it took us a while to get there, and you're like, cool, we should have asked questions earlier. Ask questions, you know, stick with it.
That's awesome. Well, congratulations on your success, Jonathan. South Fork Vodka. And so what restaurants here in the Sacramento area are going to be likely to carry it?
R15, Mulvaney's.
Okay.
We're at Cafe Bernardo. We're at Paisanos. We're at
a lot of the high-end stuff.
Yeah, high-end, low-end. In the middle, I got friends in little
places. And then
places.
You said Save Mart. Who's got it? Does Raley's have it?
Yeah, every Raley's, Bel Air, okay. Knob Hill, almost every Total Wine up in the area. Okay. BevMo's are coming along. Save Mart's. We're in about a quarter of the Northern California Safeways. All the Nugget markets.
Oh, cool.
Holiday markets a little bit up the hill.
All right, go
all the mom and pop liquor stores too: Sac Co-op, Compton's Liquor, J Street, Cordy Brothers, Rockland Bottle Shop. The little guys are my friends.
I'm always you recommend local restaurants, and you know, invest local. Put your money where your town is. Support if you drink vodka, or you know, you want to have a Bloody Mary. Ask for the South Fork vodka in your Bloody Mary.
Ask for better. Ask for better. Ask for local. Ask for better.
I love it. Ask for local when you go to the bar. That is it's great advice. Well, Jonathan, thanks for supporting what we do.
Absolutely.
And being an inspiration to other entrepreneurs. Appreciate you coming on the show.
Hey, thank you so much for having me. Yeah, I appreciate it.
And to all you out there fighting the good fight for entrepreneurship and for the backyard advantage, and of course, all of you out there fighting the good fight for our freedom, our security, and our way of life. Here at Haney Biz, the Mark Haney Show, and the Growth Factory, we're never above you. We're never below you. Always by your side.
This segment includes the personal knowledge, experiences, and opinions about angel investing by seasoned angel investors. This content is for informational purposes only and should not be considered as legal, tax, investment, or financial advice. Nothing in this segment constitutes a solicitation, recommendation, or endorsement.